This is Friday, April 12, 2024. We are in Natick, Massachusetts, and this tape is part of the Morse Institute Library's continuing Veterans Oral History Project. My name is Maureen Sullivan, and we are privileged to have with us today David Leisure. Welcome, David. May I ask when you were born?
I was born on October 16th, 1992.
And where were you born?
Westmoreland County, that's Pennsylvania, Uniontown, PA.
Now, I understand you're kind of traveling these days.
Yeah, like a Rolling Stone.
Okay. And your marital status?
I'm single.
And do you have children?
I don't.
Tell us about life in Pennsylvania growing up.
Life was pretty straightforward. We have the seasons in Pennsylvania, so there's no, you know, abstract thing there. We have the mountains, the Appalachian Mountains, some lakes scattered here and there, so nothing too crazy. It's like my dad used to say, it's one of the safest places on the planet. I mean, we don't have volcanoes or earthquakes or severe flooding or anything like that, so it's pretty, you know, pretty general.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any siblings?
I have an older sister, a younger brother, and an older brother. I also had an older sister, but she passed away, so.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. So where and when did you enter the military?
It was in southwestern Pennsylvania, and it was the junior year of my high school where I had the epiphany that I was going to join the Navy. And recruiters, Navy recruiters, since I have experience with that, are kind of slippery sometimes. So, you know, you got to go to one mall and then you got to go to another mall. And sometimes it's like chasing the ball around. So eventually we found someone in, I think it was the Westmoreland Mall in Greensburg, I think is where we found someone.
And why did you join the Navy?
There's quite a few reasons why I joined the Navy. My uncle, who's around 75 now, he joined during Vietnam because he saw the writing on the wall that they were going to draft, and he's like, well, I might as well just cut the cord myself and do it. And he used to tell us stories whenever we were little, like, of his travels and the places he's been and stuff like that. I kind of checked off all the boxes, travel, adventure, make a little bit of money. As an 18-year-old, I didn't really do it for patriotic reasons. I probably would have said there was patriotic reasons, but I was pretty immature at that age, as I think a lot of 18-year-olds are. So really, I was just kind of looking for an adventure and some fun. So kind of kill a few birds with one stone.
Mm-hmm. Okay, once you had all the papers signed and you're ready to go, where did they send you for basic?
So the Navy used to have basic training in Florida and I believe California, but they closed those for whatever reason. I think budget cuts. And the only place the Navy does training now is in Great Lakes, Illinois. So, or as we like to call it, Great Mistakes. So,
I think I've heard that term a few times with my other Navy veteran interviews. And what was basic like for you?
Basic was really weird. It was like opening up a can of worms. I never had trouble with like people in high school. Like I've heard kids talk about bullying or hazing and shit. Never had any problems with that. But in boot camp, like the lid came off, and it was a weird experience. It was good. We had a good recruit division commander, RDC. But in general, it was kind of strange.
Did you receive any advance or specialized training?
So, being a culinary specialist or a cook, it was in Fort Lee, Virginia. That was our specialized training. It's an Army base, which they recently renamed to. I could be saying this wrong. I think it's Fort Myer, but now whenever I was there, it was Fort Lee, so Fort Lee, Virginia. Fort Briggs Myer, I think is what it's called.
Okay.
Now.
And you received training as a cook.
Yeah,
generally. And what did that entail?
Me trying to forget it, basically, yeah. It was, you know, that was also a unique experience. It was strange. Like, I never had an experience like this before, and I don't think I've had an experience like this after. But they kind of meld a lot of the different branches together of the people who are going to get training there. So there was some Army, some National Guard. We had a Marine, and obviously some of us sailors. And for whatever reason, we all, like, kind of bonded really well. It was kind of strange, you know, to bond so closely with people in, like, such a short amount of time. So that was interesting. But, yeah, that was a kind of a unique experience.
And how long were you down there?
Since Navy time is a little bit different than, like, civilian world time, it felt like a year, but we were probably only down there for, like, 3 months. Originally, the ACE school training was in Chicago. So we literally hopped on a bus after boot camp and just went across the street to ACE school, but they had since relocated that training to Fort Lee, so, and then we were kind of the first ones to do that.
Okay, so what happened after that? You've been trained as a cook.
Yeah. So they give you, when you graduate, they give you 2 weeks of leave. What they don't tell you is that you don't have 2 weeks of leave to use. So what you're doing is you're digging yourself in the hole. So when you do start training, or when you do start your time at your duty station, you have to first dig yourself out of that hole to start accumulating your leave days. So they basically give you 2 weeks of leave that you don't have. But after that, yeah, my step-parents picked me up from Fort Lee, Virginia. They like to drive around. So they drove down, picked me up, and then I went back up to Hopwood, PA. So spent some time with my dad.
All right, so as soon as the leave is over, where was your first duty station?
It was in Atsugi, Japan.
Did you ever travel that far?
No. The farthest I ever traveled up to that point was Virginia Beach. That was the farthest I had traveled.
Okay. So how long were you stationed in Japan?
4 years for the duration of my time.
Wow.
Yeah.
So where was the area in Japan again?
So Atsugi is a little naval air facility, and it is probably, I could be butchering this, but it's definitely in the Kanto area, so it's near Tokyo. It's probably 30 miles north of Tokyo or something like that, so, yeah.
So along with being trained as a cook, did the Navy kind of prepare you for, you're about to spend 4 years in Japan.
Yeah.
Anything about the culture, about the language?
In terms of, like, before you go there, they just give you a wish list, and they're like, where do you want to go? And that's kind of a story in and of itself. But, yeah, I wanted to go to Japan. But they don't prepare you for the experience. The best that they do is you have a class, which I'm trying to remember what the name of it is, AOBICR. I wish I could tell you what that acronym stood for, but AOBICR is designed to get the sailors integrated with the culture they are about to experience. So they do the best they can. We had a grumpy Japanese guy. They do the best they can. So,
mm-hmm. Well, some of my other project interviews of those veterans who are stationed in Japan, they were there mostly just after World War II in the 1950s during the occupation. So tell us a bit about being in Japan in the 2010s.
Yeah, you know, you have to, like, try to put yourself in the mindset of a naive 18-year-old who's, like, infatuated with Japan. Like, I didn't really understand any of that, although it did feel really weird being a sailor, wearing the uniforms that they were wearing, being in Japan. In a weird way, it almost felt like like walking in their shoes a little bit. I never, ever received any kind of malice from Japanese people at all. I had a grumpy guy once, but that was a different situation. But in the 2010s, I mean, the Japanese are, they're like, they want to talk to you. They want to practice their English with you. Yeah, very, very friendly, very kind. They will go out of their way to miss their train to show you which platform to get on for your train. So very courteous, very kind people.
So let's get back with you on the base. What were your duties while you were stationed?
So it kind of evolved and fluctuated throughout my time in the Navy. The first year basically was, you know, doing the basic grunt culinary specialist cook work, which is, you know, while we were on shore, not deployed, we worked at a little galley called the Far East Galley. And mostly the American sailors prepped, they did like veg prep and pastas in the back. They actually had Japanese cooks who worked in the galley. And a lot of those guys were really cool. There was one guy, his name was Sato-san. He was super cool, long hair, rings, you know, tattoos, just a super chill guy. But yeah, they were definitely an interesting, cool people to work with. So
what was your rate at the time?
Well, I started as an E1, which is Seaman Recruit. They used to have cooler names of the ratings back in World War II, which was like Seaman First Class or something. But I could have sworn, you know, they say if you run a certain time in boot camp, they promote you. I could have sworn I ran that certain time. I guess I didn't. So I basically just, yeah, I was E1 and then kind of, you know, throughout my time just made rank very little gradually. So
what was your rate when you left the service?
So my rate, well, the Navy says rank. Rate is your MOS, basically, your job. I don't say that to be rude. It's
just okay.
It fluctuates over branches. But my rank whenever I got out was E3 because I didn't like the job and I bumped heads with a lot of people. And right before I got out, they had the third class exam, which A, I didn't study for, B, I wasn't interested, and C, I might not have been thinking about this at the time, but if I make third class right before I get out, I'm taking that third class from someone. So I'm taking that third class from someone who might be staying in and wants to make rank. I probably wasn't thinking about that, but I Christmas treed the exam and gave it to one of my squadron guys, and he just kind of looked at me like, all right. So
well, at least you got 4 years out of it.
Yeah, you know.
Anything else about your experience in Japan?
Everything. I mean, you know, when I first got to Japan, obviously, you know, you're 18, you're on the other side of the planet, and you're in the military. It's a lot of cold showers all at once. And at first I was terrified of being in Japan. Like, it was like nauseating. You're like, nobody speaks English. I can't read the signs or anything. Like, but after a few deployments, probably after the first deployment, you know, Japan was like this big welcoming giant. You know what I mean? It was like the, you know, not comfort zone, but it definitely enveloped you, you know what I mean, like metaphorically, like in its arms. And I came to love Japan. I really do love Japan. And it's from my naive understanding, infatuation as a 17-year-old who watched anime to someone who actually experienced it, the relationship definitely reached an arc. So I really, really enjoy Japan.
So on occasion when you had breaks from your duties, did you check out the rest of Japan? Did you go to other countries?
So I did the best that I could to explore Japan whenever I was not working. We had duty sections, and whenever my duty section wasn't working, I would go on what I called, like, you know, my expeditions, like my little exploring. We had a retired master chief in AOBICR. He was a CB. And he said that he used to take a dart and just throw it at the map, you know what I mean, and wherever it landed on, he would go. And I kind of had that sort of approach too. I was like, oh, you know, let me look at the map and this place looks, sounds interesting. Let me try that. So I did that with Japan a lot and, you know.
Now, if memory serves, you were active duty from 2011 to 2015. And I seem to remember there being a big earthquake in Japan while you were there.
Actually, I just missed it.
Oh, wow.
I just missed it. And it's different between American states, but some states are slower in construction than others. I don't know how true this is, but I read that the Japanese government like cleaned up everything like that, basically. And I wasn't there to see it, but I can tell you, when they told me whenever I arrived there, they're like, we just had an earthquake. I'm like, where? Like, what, you know what I mean? Like, there was no semblance anywhere of there being an earthquake. So I just missed it. I just missed it.
You were lucky.
Yeah.
So 4 years in Japan, your tour is over. What happens next?
Try to transition, which is a weird, awkward experience in and of itself. I guess, you know, I'm still doing that in a way, but yeah, you know, it's weird and difficult when you're indoctrinated into this special club that is the military, and then B, you know, your mind is still forming as an 18-year-old, and then C, you're indoctrinated into this other country as well. And then to kind of throw all of that away and be like, okay, go be an American civilian again, it's kind of hard to do. So I definitely, it was a harder struggle of a transition than I thought it was going to be.
Did you join any veterans service organizations or programs to kind of help you with that transition?
I felt like a lot of those things were for older veterans. And unfortunately, a lot of the like VFW and things like that, they're, and I don't mean this in a weird way, but they're mostly for like combat veterans and things like that. And you saying it, I never really heard it before besides myself, but like, it's kind of a weird thing to say, like, I didn't really do much in the military. And I don't mean that as like a whatever thing, but for me, it built up a self-consciousness. Like, I was very self-conscious mm-hmm. about it. You know what I mean? Like, it bothered me. You know what I mean? I wish I had done that stuff. So whenever they're like, yeah, you know, this is mostly for like older combat veterans, it's like, okay. So I felt like I fit in this weird gray area where like I was a veteran, but like I almost wasn't a veteran in a weird way. So I just kind of kept to myself and was like, oh, I'll figure it out myself. And that didn't work very well. So, but, you know.
So you were trained as a cook, really didn't like being a cook. What do you do now?
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Okay.
I write. I wrote a book, and I'd like to write some more. Mm-hmm. Also, the reason I joined the Navy was because I wanted to pay for acting school. So that's still, I'm still trying to do that. Just finished with film school, actually, or film program. So maybe see where that goes.
Yeah. So have you taken advantage of some veterans programs, such as a GI Bill or at least tuition assistance?
Yeah. Whenever I was going through school, the GI Bill worked just like the way it does it. Mm-hmm. If there's one thing that I found veterans are pretty unanimous across the board with, it's that the GI Bill works. Like, they're like, it works. It actually, you know what I mean? Like, and it does. I mean, that there's no gray areas or anything. It's pretty cut and dry. So,
I'm just curious, have you been able to locate like support groups of veterans who are around your same age? Perhaps they had the same experiences?
That is the million-dollar question. It is the million-dollar question. I think it's a very important question, and I have not. You know, with all the luxuries of modern technology and social media, you think it would be easy, but if anything, it makes it harder because it's more ambiguous, and it's like some of the people are flaky and it's not very solid like maybe like an organization such as the VFW or something. I think that there should be there's probably 10,000 nonprofits out there for veterans, but a lot of those are for combat veterans, and a lot of those are like, hey, let's go for a run together and that'll solve our problems. Like, there needs to be some type of cleanup work or new VFW that incorporates all veterans, I think, so that when people, you know, such as myself, and I my heart does go out to future persons who are transitioning, they need to have a transitioning something that helps them transition. I wouldn't want anyone to go through the experience that I did. I would want someone to have a better support group. So,
well, David, I know I do normally interview veterans who are older, and when I do come across younger veterans, they're pretty much on the same wavelength as you are.
In what aspect?
In trying to find support among their peers, their age group, trying to find programs, and even up here in Massachusetts, where there are Lord knows how many programs, I'm sure there is something that could fit your needs.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Not to go on a tangent or anything, you know, like when Native Americans would come back from war, like everyone had been in war. So it was like, okay, cool. And I'm not saying that anyone is better than anyone else, and I'm speaking generally from limited knowledge. But when World War II veterans came back from war, some of their parents were in World War I. So they're like, it's cool, we get it. You know what I mean? Nowadays, you know, starting with Iraq and Afghanistan, when people were coming back, you had some people whose parents were in Vietnam, but they were kind of not doing so good to begin with. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, when you have people coming back, it's like, sometimes you're the first person in your family who went and joined the service. The closest person I had was my uncle, and he didn't really talk about his experiences that much. So, but yeah, that's just my tangent. I guess what I was trying to say was some countries, and I'm not necessarily advocating for it, but some countries do have a 1 to 2 year mandatory military requirement. And what that does is, you know, first off, it makes people grow up. And second off, it does create this community where, like, when you come back, it's like, I've already been that. I've already been through that. So here are the answers to all my problems. Mm-hmm. You know, so you don't have to spend 10, 20, 30 years trying to figure it out on yourself. I can just give you the answers, basically, because I've been there. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, David, you have provided some unique insights, being a younger veteran, not being part of Iraq, Afghanistan, or any general theater of war, and just trying to figure out what you're going to do next.
Yeah.
So, but still, we normally ask this question, how important was it for you to serve in the military?
Yeah. As I get older, it becomes more profound. I actually almost kicked myself pretty hard whenever I was in the military. I actually didn't like, obviously a lot of people don't like it whenever they get there. They're like, oh, maybe this wasn't a good idea. And I like tried to self-sabotage myself to get, you know, in a way like kicked out. But that never happened. Like, there was always like a situation where it was like, you're here, man. You know what I mean? Like, you know, whatever. So, but as I get older, I'm so thankful that maybe it's in a sick and twisted way, but I am thankful for the experience. You know, it was very profound, and it's certainly profound whenever you're a younger person too, and you're growing up. You have to grow up fast, basically, and that's why a lot of military people, a lot of veterans, I think, I always say that everyone gets older, but not everyone grows up. And I think a lot of veterans are pretty mature, and they, you know, they have to grow up fast, basically. So,
definitely. David, is there anything else you'd like to say?
I can't really think of anything. I'm sure I'll think of something after the interview, but no, I think that's it.
Okay.
So.
Well, David Leisure, we thank you so much for taking part in the Natick Veterans Oral History Project.
Thank you.